offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang, as always. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Arvind, and we are coming to you live from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. And we are here to continue a satsang that we began last week on a very important topic. It's actually a beautiful saying that Swami has given us, and we also discussed about how the saying came to be, the beautiful incident behind that. It's about the four F's: follow the master, face the devil, fight till the end, and finish the game. And we covered the first two F's of follow the master and face the devil last week. We spoke about how any number of times whenever Swami spoke about follow the master, Swami would always immediately add that the master is the conscience and the conscience is to be followed. And we also saw how following the conscience in many ways points out to leading a dharmic life. And that was what we had discussed about. We also spoke about what it is to face the devil, of not wanting to shy away from facing obstacles when taking on the path of following the master. And how Swami has also mentioned that the devil that has to be faced is also the temptations which come up the way. Because the temptations is what makes life easy. As Swami would often say, it's always a choice between Shreyas and Prayas. The right path versus the path which is more pleasant or which is more easy. And that's always the temptation which is there. And Swami says that is the devil which has to be faced if one chooses to follow the master. But before we go into all of that, maybe we'll start with a short summary. Before that, we'll invite Arvind to join all of us. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and Sairam to all our listeners. Indeed, a very, very beautiful topic, and as we shall see when we go towards the conclusion, that this is the secret for life, and Swami has beautifully tied it and completed it. He is the one who has originated this concept of the four F's, and we shall understand all of that by the end of today's satsang. Summarizing, you know, we started off with the first F, which is follow the master. And we saw how Swami repeatedly in all his discourses, whether or not he dilates on the three other F's, he always makes it a point to explain what follow the master means. And Swami says the master is the conscience. The conscience which is universal and absolute, present in all, irrespective of age, geography, nationality, you know, whether you're good or bad, whether you're rich or poor, it doesn't matter. Everyone has a conscience which is consistent and constant for everyone. So it cannot be a case where my conscience is telling one thing and your conscience is telling one thing, because the conscience is the same divine. And if there are instances where we feel that different people's conscience is speaking different things, then it's a matter of we confusing the conscience for the voice of the mind or any of the other voices that go on in the head. And we saw how there are a few tips we can use to distinguish between the voice of the conscience and the mind and other voices. The most basic ones being that the conscience always gives one answer, the right thing that has to be done. It doesn't try to give explanations or reasoning or logic why it should be done. The only logic it sticks to is it should be done because it is the right thing to be done. On the other hand, the voices in the head try to offer suggestions and give various kinds of, you know, answers depending on 80% right, 90% right, this is also right, maybe it could be done, along with reasoning. And another important point that got highlighted is the conscience focuses only on the right thing. What is the right thing to be done? What is that which has to be done? That's why it represents dharma. Whereas all the other voices always look into how will I benefit? What is the path that I can take which offers me maximum benefit and least harm or least loss? So these are the things. We also, through examples and incidents, saw what are the benefits of following the conscience. The most important and is the peace of mind that we achieve by following the conscience, and the fearlessness that we develop. When we are following the conscience, we have no fear of anything, because we are doing the right thing. It comes from that. And therefore, Swami says, ensure that you always follow the master, always follow the conscience. You may be spiritual or non-spiritual, you may be religious, non-religious. Anything else doesn't matter as long as you follow the conscience. So following the conscience is our dharma, it is our natural state. And we also saw how the four F's are related to the five D's. And in that, the first F, which is follow the master, is represented by the two D's of devotion and duty. Devotion to God and duty, doing our duty because Swami says that's our dharma. That was what we discussed in great depth and detail last week. And then we moved on to facing the devil.
Right. And we spoke of how facing the devil is pretty much what we refer to as, you know, the practical aspects of the obstacles that we face in everyday life. If following the master was obstacle-free, then I don't think Swami would have had to make the statement saying that it's important that you do all of these things. The fact is, it does come with a little bit of resistance. It does come with a little bit of obstacles which come in our way. But it all starts with, as I think one of the elders once, when speaking in the Kulanth Hall on the same topic, the emphasis was all about the follow the master. He said, if you're able to do that one thing, then the rest of the thing actually falls in place. And that's something which we hinted last time. The moment you start giving importance to following the master, then you will find everything else is worthwhile. Any number of obstacles that come in the way are worthwhile. And we also spoke about how the obstacles themselves are of different natures. And Swami has also given the example of Hanuman and the obstacles that he faces when he's trying to go to Lanka, and how he uses different tactics to get over each one of them. And, you know, there are not all obstacles are negative obstacles in that sense. For instance, there is a very common advice that Swami would often give us when you used to have the opportunity to sit with Swami in Thrai. Swami would say, see, there are a lot of things that you learn here now, but when you go back home, your parents might not be able to understand why certain things are important. Right. So they might tell you that, you know, why are you being so quiet? Why are you, you know, always, why are you not going to the movies? Why are you not meeting your friends? So Swami would say that, you know, they're telling it out of their idea that this is good for you. They're doing it out of their love. So it is important for you not to hurt them or not to dismiss them, but also to not necessarily follow whatever they're saying, because you know you're better informed in this than them because you've had the opportunity of being with Swami. Mm-hmm. So that is a very common example of how obstacles can be of different nature. And of course, Swami would say that, you know, if you're put in a place, you have to ensure that you satisfy all the conditions. It could be government stipulations. It could be, you know, the boss who's sitting on top of you. Another beautiful incident that comes to my mind is what Shivashankar Sai Sir, the former warden of the Prashandalyam Ashram, used to say.
Right. Yeah.
So one of the first few days after he took over, and he was made the warden of a hostel of nearly 800 boys at an age of, in his early 30s, I think, if I'm not wrong. Mm. So it was a huge responsibility placed on him, and of course he was there for, I think, almost 20 years, and fared really well. So within the first few days, I think he came back to Swami with a problem that the workers in the kitchen were wanting more money, and Swami was very strict, the mess fee should not be raised. And so the hostel was in a, administration was in a fix. So he came to Swami and he said, Swami, this is the problem. What am I supposed to do? And Swami told him that if I want to deal this problem, why will I make you the warden? Hmm. So Swami said, you have to go and deal with it. And then Swami told him, see, you cannot raise the mess fee. You cannot go against the government rules and you have to deal with the workers. So now you go and deal with it. Literally saying that, see, I have given you a task. There will be problems in the task and you have to go and find ways of coming out of that situation. So this, one of the advantages of, you know, living in the proximity of Swami is even Swami's words do not mean that the road is going to get cleared for you. So what we have to go through, we will have to go through. And I think that is why this face the devil is a very important thing that Swami says. And we saw how each one of these have to be dealt with in a different way. The most obvious negative obstacles, be it in the form of peer pressure, be it in the form of somebody trying to make you do something corrupt. Swami says those are obstacles that have to be completely stamped out in that sense, outrightly. There is no negotiation necessary there. So this is what we had seen about Face the Devil. And in fact, there's one very important point which we did not cover in Face the Devil. Maybe we'll do that before we go to the third F.
Absolutely. And that point is the point of self-confidence. When follow the master was represented by faith, we have to have faith in the master, and that master is nothing but our conscience. Face the devil is about self-confidence. Because, you know, it is one thing to know that this is the right thing to do, but to have the courage to do that, one needs to have supreme self-confidence. Often this question comes up as to our faith and self-confidence contradictory, because, you know, faith is like I have faith in God, whereas confidence is about having faith in myself. Are they contradictory, or does it mean that a devotee should, how is it that a devotee can have self-confidence when the devotee has submitted himself or herself completely to God? I think Swami made it very beautifully clear through a short story he had narrated to the children of grade 8, I think. Yeah, 8th grade. When he told them about a little bird sitting on a tree and how a huge storm came and uprooted the whole tree. And when the whole tree got uprooted, the branches came crashing down, the tree fell down. Swami turns to the children and he asks them, what happened to the little bird? You know, with all the tension and drama. And the kids look back at Swami and they are wondering, yeah, Swami, what happened to the bird? They're wondering whether it did get crushed or... Then Swami smiles and says, nothing happened because the bird has its wings. It flew away. And it was a kind of an anticlimactic ending. But what came after that was so poignant and meaningful. Swami said, you see, the world is like the tree and you are the little bird there. If you depend on the tree for your safety, you may come crashing down any moment. You don't know what storm is brewing in which side of the sky. But instead of that, if you rely on your own wings, then irrespective of the storm, irrespective of the wind, irrespective of what happens to the tree, what happens to the world, you are safe. And then Swami continued saying, what are those two wings? Those two wings are the wings of self-confidence and faith. You know, when we look at it, it is like in order to fly and not depend on the world, it's not enough if you have faith. You need to have self-confidence as well. They're like the two wings of the bird, Swami says. So, other than being on the left side and right side, there is no difference between the two wings. So also when we look at it, we realize that faith is about having confidence in the God whom I think is outside of me. And confidence is nothing but the faith in the Lord who is within me. So it's just like a play on words. They are basically the same thing, which means that one is faith in the God outside, one is faith in the God inside. It's like how Swami would give the example of a balloon. You blow air in it. There is the balloon, there is air in the balloon, there is air outside the balloon. It is the same air. And Swami would say that the air outside is like the consciousness, while the air inside the balloon is like the conscience. So, the conscience, which we say is the Lord within, and therefore self-confidence is absolute must for a devotee, because if I have faith that there God is there, I also have faith that God is within me. And self-confidence is not arrogance. Self-confidence is that supreme positive feeling that comes because of the conviction that the Lord is within me as well. And therefore, we need self-confidence when we are facing the devil. We need to know that, you know, we are on God's side. Whether it is, I mean, God is on our side, God is within us. That is what Swami would keep saying in his discourses. Devuduni, intane, jantane, kantane. I don't know if I told it wrong, but Swami would say, he's above you, below you, around you, within you. He's always with you. So, in face the devil, it is very, very important that we develop self-confidence. So, the first F is about one wing. The second F is about the second wing. Both the wings are necessary for us to take flight.
True. In fact, you know, one of the ways of looking at what the devil is, you know, the lack of confidence or the fear that we often have. It's both ways, as you rightly said. It's about the confidence in ourselves, at the same time, the confidence in Swami also. And it is applicable even for people who probably do not have a God whom they are devoted to in that sense. Because Swami would often say, when speaking to his students, one thing which he would tell, which is so striking, is Swami would say, see, you have education in your hand. You know, you've been educated. It's after all one small stomach that you have to feed. How much do you need? It might appear like Swami is telling about how easy it is to take care of yourself, but it is actually a form of giving you self-confidence. that tomorrow if you're in a job and you're threatened, your job might go, or you fear for your future. Some would say there's nothing, absolutely nothing needed more than your own efforts to take care of you and the people who depend on you. So that confidence should be able to give you the might to stick to what is right. So that Swami would say that. And the other thing is, the unknown always gives us fear, right? That is what is the other thing. That what would happen if I don't get this? You know, somebody who's trying to become a doctor or somebody who's trying to get a particular job in a particular stream. What would happen if I don't get this? What would happen if this does not happen? And that fear is what we always, makes us step back and makes us hesitate to do the right thing. And Swami would say that the best way to deal with that is just be a little open. Just say that, you never know. You never know, the worst could be the best for you. Just being prepared to take things as they come, just to have that attitude. And I always go back to this example of Dr. Abdul Kalam. You know, his story has this beautiful conclusion, the way it happens, where he wants to become a fighter pilot. That was his ambition from his young age. And then he goes to Rishikesh to give that exam. I think somewhere near Rishikesh, Dehradun, I think, is the center where they're doing that selection process. So he goes there after his aeronautical engineering. He goes for that exam. And I think they select something like 13 pilots or 12 pilots. And he just misses it by one number. He comes 13th and they take the 12 pilots or something like that.
Okay.
So he's, the dream of his lifetime has come to a crash. So he writes in his book that he's in Rishikesh. He's looking at a cliff. He's standing. He doesn't say that he's
contemplating
suicide, but everything that he says otherwise suggests that, he's so down and, he finds the future to be so bleak. And that's when he meets Swami Shivananda, who later he recognizes as Swami Shivananda, who comes there and tells him this very thing. So he said, the future is so long. Don't be so disappointed. You never know what your future holds for you. So he says, then he actually has another exam that he has to give. And he says, you just see, just be open. Just see that what God has in store for you. Don't be so despondent. If you look at it, he goes for the other exam. Then he becomes a scientist in DRDO. Then he eventually becomes the advisor to the defense ministry. Right? If he had become a pilot, he would have been one of the personnel in the defense. So he becomes the scientific advisor to the defense ministry. Eventually, he becomes the president of India, who is the supreme commander of all your
armed forces.
Right? What he wanted to be was one fighter pilot in one of the wings of the defense, and where it took him. So that attitude of, I don't know, this is what I want, but you never know, not getting it might be the best thing for me.
It requires, really, as you say, self-confidence and faith. The faith helps there because when you are disappointed, when you see the failure, you tell yourself that this is good for me. I don't know how, but this is good for me. That's why it didn't happen. I mean, the example that you mentioned now of Abdul Kalam, if at that point in time he had said that, no, this is good for me, that's why I didn't get selected, he would see that what he had said that time is actually true. And though we get inspired listening to Abdul Kalam's story, we ourselves don't imbibe that in our own lives. And I feel one of the causes for that, this is the cause for fear, because the fear of uncertainty. And the fear is there because we are unable to imagine something that can happen out of the ordinary. And it has happened in so many lives. We are not able to imagine it for our lives. And that comes because of our obsession and our, habit of extrapolating whatever we have now. Whatever we are currently, we just add a little bit, 10% or 20% to that, and extrapolate it and think that 10 years from now, I will be like this. I remember seeing a TED talk on this same theme, Prem. And in that TED talk, the person actually asked the whole audience to write down what were their goals, what they thought of themselves, what they will be, among whoever is able to remember, 10 years before what they had thought, to write it down. And everybody spend some time writing it down, and then he randomly picks a few people to ask them what they are currently compared to what they were 10 years back. And all of them whom he picks randomly are totally different from what they had written. Okay, so they have written that 10 years ago, I thought I'll be this, I'll do this, I'll do this, I'll do that. interesting, why I found it so intriguing was, as that happened, I also participated in the exercise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I also wrote down what I had thought of my life 10 years back, what it would be currently. You know, and I found that it's almost 90% different from what it is actually. Means I'm 90% wrong in extrapolating my future. But then, you know, he then conducts a second exercise. He tells them that, now all of you, just write down what you think you will be 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And when he does that exercise, surprisingly and even shockingly, all of them invariably do the same mistake again of extrapolating what you are having now to 10 years from now. That's it. And then he says, see, this is one mistake we do. That's how he concludes his talk by saying, look at this mistake. We have already got proof that 10 years back what we thought of ourselves is totally wrong. If not totally, at least 90% of it is wrong. And yet we continue to live each day extrapolating whatever we have now forever. And even in the Mahabharata, Dharmaraja tells, when the Yaksha asks him what is the most surprising thing, he tells this only, one aspect of this only. He says that man sees people dying around him every day, and yet he leads his life as if he's going to live on forever. Because we have this, problem or habit of extrapolating whatever we are having now. And that affects everything. Suppose everything is going fine now, I begin to neglect God, I don't care about anything, I think no end of myself, because I think the success that I'm having now will go on infinitely into the future. And the same thing holds good for the bad also. When something bad happens, we get into depression and we get into a very low frame of mind because we extrapolate this sadness forever. You know, you get a business loss and you think that I have lost this much in this year, which means in 10 years time I would have lost this much. Everything might just change in next 1 month. So I think all this happens because of our unfortunate habit of extrapolating our present into the future without having any knowledge of what the future actually holds.
The other technical point which generally Swami would say is, you know, the same thing what you're saying about all of what we were telling, the fear of the uncertainty that future holds, the idea that what I have now I should continue to have. You know, what I'm seeking is what I'll be seeking even 10 years from now. That's another mistake that we make.
Mm.
I mean, as children, at least till you're 20 years, that is so drastic. That 5 years back, 10 years back, if you see, what you wanted was, at that time, what you were so obsessed with means nothing now. And that's another mistake that we make. It's because, as Swami would say, that, you know, we are all the time in that grip of raga and dvesha. What I like and what I dislike. And what we like so much we get attached to it. What we dislike it so much that we start fearing it. That what will happen if it happens to me in my life? What will happen if it happens tomorrow? And everything that we do is driven by this raga and dvesha. And that is the technical aspect which Swami would say.
Mm.
That doing all actions purely guided by raga and dvesha is the karma which is going to bind you. You eventually end up, you know, getting caught up in that. If you want to come out of that, it is to do karma which is beyond raga and dvesha, which is the right thing to do at that moment, which is nothing but following the master. So following the master itself, if you're able to do that diligently, you are to a great extent going beyond your likes and dislikes. And we would see that, you know, even in small, small incidents, when you go and ask Swami, what do you want me to do? What subject to pick? Swami would, everybody else, you know, in your family, if you go and ask this question, they'll say, which subject are you good at?
Mm.
Which subject are you have scored your highest marks? But Swami's question was always different. Which is the subject that you fear? Or which is the subject that you've got least marks in? And Swami will take that subject. So it's nothing but face the fear and conquer that fear. Because that is when you have actually obliterated a certain sense of, you know, raga and dvesha. I like this so much because I fear the other one. So you are actually opening up to following the master a little more freely the more you do that.
When you say that, I am just having a flashback, you know. When I was in grade 10, my sole objective was to become a medical doctor. And at that time, during Pad Namaskar that Swami was giving to all our school children that we had come from Sri Shailam, Swami just told me, you take biosciences. And that is for grade 11. So I applied for grade 11 for biosciences, and I felt that I'm set on my goal of becoming a doctor. Within a few weeks, Swami came in my dream and said, no, don't become a doctor. You know, do biosciences, I said. So that is when I got to know that the BSc course in our college is called BSc Biosciences. I took that as the thing and started BSc Biosciences. in the third year of biosciences, when you have to choose your majoring subject, you know, when I again got an opportunity while doing a birthday tray celebration, when asked Swami, you know, I actually had placed three chits for different subjects. And Swami picked up the one which said chemistry. So I had a kind of a shift from bioscience to chemistry, and my master's was done in chemistry. And after that, again, when I was seeking Bhagwan's blessings, the message that I received was to do MBA. And after doing MBA, then when I said, Swami, what should I do next? What should I work? Yes, the job that I got was in Radio Sai. Now, from a worldly perspective, if you look at it, BSc Bioscience, I mean, 11th and 12th you do Bioscience, then BSc Bioscience, then in MSc you do Chemistry, then MBA, and you end up in a, you know, Radio Sai will be classified as a media organization. In media, there is no kind of synergy, there is no kind of flow, but today when I look back at it, and if I'm asked, what is it that you would like to change? Trust me, Prem, I don't want to change anything, because I feel it's so perfect and beautiful. And I feel that this is one way of, this is where, you know, faith comes in, faith and self-confidence comes in, that you look at it and you say that I may not be able to make sense of it, I may not understand where this is headed, but this guidance is coming to me from someone who knows the beginning, who knows the end, who is the beginning and end of all time. And that is why there is faith. And because of the faith, you also have the self-confidence. You don't feel low about, you know, where is my career headed to? Where am I headed to? Because it looks like such drastic shifts. And I faced this problem with not my immediate family, but so many of my friends and, in quotes, well-wishers. I mean, not in quote well-wishers, real well-wishers. They really wished me well, but they were wondering, what are you doing? I mean, how fickle? Why are you shifting? You should stick to one thing. But today, all of them are proved wrong simply because of Bhagwan's blessings, of his love, of his grace, and somehow managed to hold on to what he said. So that's why, you know, devil need not necessarily be evil, as we discussed during the last week. Devil can also mean the doubt that sets in. You know, they say the devil of doubt. The doubt that comes within you whether, hey, am I doing it right? In such instances, I think we have to go back to why we are doing what we are doing. We are doing it because this is Swami's instruction. And that itself should be, you know, sufficient reason for doing it. Everything else may seem that it is opposing and it doesn't make sense. But the very fact that Swami has prescribed it and Swami says it is good, that means it is good. So when we say facing the devil, it also refers to facing this devil of doubt. Doubt that comes, and therefore we have to remove it. Now, in conclusion, you know, while Swami speaks about the four F's, Swami says that this devil of temptation or devil of doubt, it always arises when man desperately seeks artha. You know, and artha, generally we think of it as standing for wealth. But artha in the true sense stands for wealth, recognition, name, fame, relationships, all the worldly wealth. So Swami says when one's focus becomes this worldly wealth, that is when he is led into temptation. When instead of following the master, you follow the world, you get led into temptations. And therefore Swami says, follow the master is all about dharma and face the devil is about artha. What is the kind of artha you seek? What is the wealth you seek? If it is the spiritual wealth that you seek, then you overcome the temptations. If it is the worldly wealth that you are seeking, you will succumb to the temptations.
And the most important thing I think in the face the devil component is the acceptance of the obstacle itself. It is not to feel that, oh my God, this is coming and I have to face this. That kind of an acceptance itself will give you that confidence. You know, when Swami speaks about dharma leading to artha, Swami would often say that it's not wrong to have artha. It is not wrong to have family and friends and people around you. It's not wrong to even crave for a little bit of fame. Because Swami would say, kirti, the pursuit of kirti will actually keep you on the dharmic path, Swami would say at times. And even money, Swami would say that it's not wrong. You know, a little bit of money is always important for leading a life where you don't get worried about money, right? The little money is required so that you don't think about money. So Swami would say that artha has to be joined to dharma. That is the most important thing. It should not be detached from dharma. So facing the devil, if it becomes detached from follow the master, I think that is when we get lost. At the same time, when you're following the master, it is not that we should say that there should be no devils in my path. In fact, there's a very beautiful piece written by Abraham Lincoln. It is called, I think, The Meditation on the Divine Will. And we all know the context of Abraham Lincoln's struggle against the slave trade at that time, right? Because it was a very interesting. Now it's very obvious for us to look back and say that yes, slave trade was bad, and it should have been abolished. But those were times when it was not so clear. I mean, it's feeling odd even to say it now. But those were times when, you know, it was not so clear. There were some states which believed that it should be there because, you know, there's a cost of production which is involved and, you know, inflation will go up and all that. And then there was these states which believed that it has to be abolished. It's inhuman. So Abraham Lincoln at that point, when he was the crusader for abolishing of slave trade, he sat down and he was thinking, see, this is so clear to me. Definitely God will not want this. But it's not that those who are opposing this are against God. They are also devotees of God. They are also people who feel, and they are doing it with the belief that this is how God meant it to be. So he's saying literally these are two clashes of two people who are, both of them are thinking that they're doing the will of God. So he says, if I'm so sure that this is what God wants me to do, and still there are obstacles, and then in that meditative state he writes that down, it can only mean that God has willed this contest. If God has not willed this contest, his will would have gone through, right? God wants this to happen. At the same time, he wants the obstacles to be there too, so that what comes out is going to be a much, much more stronger resolution and something which will last forever. I think that is the attitude with which we have to look at any obstacle or any obstruction that we have, especially Sai centers, Swami's organization, where everybody is thinking that this is what Swami wants. Right, when there's a clash of two ideologies with the same backing that this is what is the best thing for Swami's organization, I think this attitude is most important to come to the right conclusion.
And again, connecting these 4 F's with the 5 D's, we saw how follow the master is represented by duty and devotion of the 5 D's. Face the devil can be represented by the D of discrimination, because it's about overcoming temptations and ensuring that we do what is right and keep away from what is wrong. So on that note, dear listeners, we will conclude our discussion on Face the Devil and move on to Fight Till the End, which is the 3 F. But before that, we'll take a quick little break and see you on the other side of the break. Om Shri Satya Sai, Om Shri Satya Sai, Om Shri Satya Sai, Om Shri Satya Sai. So beautiful, as I give myself to you, you are my guiding light, you make everything so right. I will follow you Welcome back, dear listeners. Continuing our discussion on the four F's, the third F we come to is fight till the end. And when it comes to fight till the end, Swami refers to this as the fight that we must engage in against the six enemies or the Arshad Vargas. These are the enemies, Swami says, that bring about temptation in man. When facing the devil was about facing the temptations, fight till the end is because these Arshad Vargas are always waiting on the sidelines to attack us and tempt us. And what are these six enemies? Swami says they are Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya. Otherwise, desire, anger, greed, infatuation or delusion, pride and envy or jealousy. And these are the six enemies that one must be vigilant against always. And Swami says that all of these six enemies, they emerge through the one called Kama. Kama, which is desire. Desire is the root cause for all the other enemies of man as well. And therefore, Swami says one must be very vigilant against Kama. So, while dharma was represented by follow the master and artha by face the devil, Swami says Kama is the word that can be used to represent for fight till the end, because it involves a constant battle against this desire, because desire is the beginning. And I think that is what is even referred to by Bhagwan Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, right? That he says, dhyayate vishayan pumsaha, meaning that the path of ruin for, I'm not quoting the entire two shlokas, but the summary of the two shlokas is that the path of ruin for man begins by man desiring worldly or sensual objects, sensory objects. And Krishna gives the entire cycle of how desire leads to expectation, and non-fulfillment of the expectation leads to anger. Anger leads to loss of discrimination, like that, leading to total ruin of man. No, which means anger is that little hole through which the dirty waters of these six enemies, Arshad Varga, seep in till they fill and sink the whole boat, sink the lifeboat, the boat of life that we are using to cross this Bhavasagara. And therefore, Swami says, be ever vigilant against these six enemies.
Right, and whenever I read this third one, fight till the end, and especially where Swami mentions about these six inner enemies, what occurs to me is it is that importance for that constant vigilance at till the very last moment, because even the slightest of any of these remaining will actually, you know, is enough to pull you down completely. And we have discussed about it even when we did the Ramakatha Satsang, the story of how King Kaushika becomes the great sage Vishwamitra, where, you know, we are talking of someone who has done thousands and thousands of years of penance. And each time the first obstacle comes in the form of Menaka, a divine damsel is sent down by Indra in order to distract him. And that is spoken of as the first blemish that he has in him, which pulls him down. And the next time it comes in the form of anger. Because next time, I think another damsel is sent. I think this time Urvashi is sent. But he gets angry and he curses her. And then he realizes that I've overcome Kama, but I've not overcome Krodha. I still have the blemish of Krodha in me. And each one of these stages, each one of these obstacles are actually meant to remove those things. You know, that's how the face the devil and fight till the end is actually connected in that sense. So each one of these obstacles is given as a ways for him to recognize that this is the fault which is in him. And if you look at it, many, many devotees have gone through this. That where Swami would point out that somebody who has been so perfect in our eyes, we would see that this person is so perfect, but Swami will point out some error. It is almost like saying that the game is not yet over. You still have to keep fighting till you're able to remove each one of those flaws in you.
I remember, you know, when we say Kama, Swami would point out in his discourses repeatedly that you might have achieved everything in the world, but even if one of these enemies come to you, it's finished. Life gets demolished and lost completely. Swami would say, in the case of Ravana, it was this desire. He lusted for another man's wife, and though he had all forms of knowledge, you know, Ravana was a master of 64 forms of knowledge, whereas Rama was a master of only 32 forms of knowledge. Ravana had everything, and yet his downfall came because of his weakness for Kama. In the same way, Swami says, Hiranyakashipu suffered from only one blemish of Krodha or anger. You know, these people whom we paint as Rakshasas or ogres or demons in our scriptures, when we look at it actually, they had only one blemish. Like Ravana had Kama, Hiranyakashipu had Krodha. Swami would often say that, imagine now, we are having all the six, what should we call ourselves? That is why I think Swami gave us the mantra that you can keep telling yourself, I am not animal, I am man. I am not animal, I am man. Because just being a man itself, having human values and human nature itself is such a huge development or positive over what we are currently. In the same vein, Swami would say that if you take the case of Duryodhana, he suffered only from lobha, which is greed. He had excessive greed. So each of these six vices by themselves are able to completely destroy a person spiritually. You know, make them do all the wrong things. And then, therefore, we realize how much more important it is to fight away traces of these. Because they are like seeds that can grow. I remember once in the bhajan hall, when all the students were seated, Swami was speaking to them. Swami told them that many times when you are here, when you are doing your sadhana or when you are with Swami, you feel that you have got a pure mind. It's all clear and clean. And Swami said that is indeed true. It is like a land which is barren and there's nothing growing there. It's fine. But there are those vasanas, those seeds that are there beneath the ground. And the first shower of rain, they will start sprouting. And this is indeed the case. We will not come across, you know, wild rice or wild wheat. All these wild plants that we see growing wherever are all mostly weeds and the plants that we would like to throw away. You know, very rarely do you find actual beneficial plants growing on their own. So also Swami pointed out that in the field of your heart, which looks clean, that there is no negative thing growing, the moment the first rains come, when you get in contact with the outside world, that is what Swami would always fear, you know, when the vacations come, when the students have to go away home. His fear would be that till now you were with Bhagwan, you are fine. What will happen when you go out now? And so many examples Swami would give. Swami would give the example of a pot that is filled with water and immersed in a much bigger tank of water. And Swami would say that is always full of water. That is the water of devotion. And you are all those pots who are immersed in this. This is like a tank of devotion and therefore you are always having. But the moment you take the pot out of the tank and carry it somewhere, the water starts evaporating and over time, the pot loses all the water. And that's why Swami would be so worried, and he would plead with the students, almost telling them that you must practice whatever you are practicing here in the hostel at home as well. So Swami said that when the first rains come, these weeds will sprout and grow, and therefore you have to be ever vigilant. It is not about how you are feeling possibly at Prashanthi Nilayam or when you do your prayers. It's about a vigilance that has to be every moment. And I think we can follow that other advice when it comes to bad thoughts, because we can't stop bad thoughts from arising. Swami said, don't get attached to the bad thoughts. Let them just flow and go off. Attach your mind and focus only on the good thoughts that come in the flow of your mind.
And if you look at it, when you look at all of the other things, Swami would say that only if you look at anger, if you look at greed, all of it starts with only that karma or that desire. Like in that Gita Shloka, where he says that you desire for something and you get attached to it. When you get attached to it, if you don't get it, you get angry. If you get angry, then you get deluded. So Everything, all of the other six enemies start with that karma. And till we are overcoming that, we always have that pitfall of going to any of these things. And that is why Swami says that constantly thinking that, is it right? In fact, I'm reminded of when Swami says that fight till the end stands for the artha of karma, dharma artha karma. We said there's this beautiful kriti which Tyagaraja sings. It's a very famous kriti, and I think many times rendered in front of Swami, where he actually says this very thing. He says it's a kriti which says bantu riti kolu yavaya rama, which means it is like telling Rama, you give me the role of being a guard at your door. It's almost like saying that you're in my heart and I should be a guard that stands at the door of the heart. And in that he says, the line that he says is, I should be able to fight all the inner enemies, starting with the one who wields the bow of the sugar cane.
Which is karma.
So he recognizes that it starts all with that karma. So he's the leader of the rest of the enemies. So he says that enemy group, it starts with that of the one who is wielding the bow of sugarcane. I should be able to feel them off as a guard. And, I'll just get that meaning. So he says, I should be the royal guard who is able to fight these enemies, and I should have the authority. He says, I should have the authority to fight and put them off. And what will give me this authority? And very, very beautifully he says, I need a heavy armor of horripilation, or in the other words, that bhava. The armor that I should have is that of the bhava every time I hear your name. And he says, I should have the royal badge of Rama Bhakti. He says, you should give me the tag that this is a devotee of the Lord, which means that I should have that kind of a caliber to say that God has given me this title. And the sword I will hold in my hand is Rama Nama. He says, with this, I will stand at the door as your guard and I will keep away all these six enemies. So again, it reiterates the importance of that follow the master, that obedience and that obeisance to the master is the starting of all of these, the other three things.
I think we'll just play that beautiful song because it's a lovely kriti. It will also inspire the atmosphere around us. So don't go away anywhere, dear listeners. We will come back after this little break, hearing to this beautiful kriti, and we will finish the game.
Thank you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. That was the beautiful Kriti that we were mentioning, and no wonder Swami was so fond of Tyagaraja, because these are not merely songs and expressions of devotion, but a very deep understanding of what the spiritual path is all about. And that is about the fight till the end, where we were talking about how all of these things, these are not, that's why Swami would often say these are inner enemies. You know, outer enemies will give you a sign and, you know, you can see them, the ways of fending them off. But the inner enemies are part of you. You don't know when they're going to prop up. And that is why that constant vigilance is very, very important. And even in dealing with some of these inner enemies, there are, I think, two ways of doing it. We recall narrating this incident when we were doing the satsang on anger management, where one of our lecturers in the Anantapur campus was narrating this incident, that she had heard Swami saying that whenever you get angry, you have to find ways of dissipating that energy. And I think we had even spoken about the techniques which Swami spoke in Thrai Vrindavan. He said either you drink water or you go and take a jog or you look at the mirror, different ways of calming your anger down so that no damage is caused. So this teacher had this habit of whenever she would get angry, and you know, being a teacher, I think you have many, many occasions where you do get angry. And she would go to the prayer hall in the campus and mop it from end to end. And our prayer halls are quite big, so it would take a lot of effort to do that. And that way she would calm down, and by then she finishes that, she would be fine. So she felt that she was doing the thing which Swami actually expects us to do. And she was saying that once Swami calls them for an interview, her family and her sister and all of them were there. And all of a sudden Swami looks at her mother and points to this teacher and says, she gets very angry every now and then. And the mother was saying that, no, Swami, that's not one of her flaws. You know, I mean, clearly some of us stand out for our anger, or some of us stand out for our impatience. But she was not a person like that. So the mother was saying, no, Swami, it's not like that. She's not a person who gets very angry. Swami says, no, I know she gets very angry. And in the mind, this teacher was like protesting. Swami, I do get angry once in a while, but I'm doing exactly what you want me to do. This is how you have taught us to deal with the anger. So she got a little upset with it, but
she got angry about Swami.
Right, angry about Swami telling her that you're getting angry. Right, but she was saying that after she had calmed down, she was thinking about why Swami said that, and she said a very beautiful point. She said that yes, when we get angry, Swami wants us to do that, but what actually Swami wants is that we should not get angry at all. So the impulse of becoming angry is what Swami wants us to remove at the end of the day, which means yes, when these inner enemies raise their hood, you have to fight them, but the whole idea is to ensure that it is completely removed, and that is the goal that we have to be at.
Exactly. You know what Swami gave advice to her about Krodha, I think we can extrapolate it to all of these six: Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada and Matsarya. You know, when I feel envy, when I feel jealousy, now the possibly I express it. When I'm angry, I express it. When I feel lust, I express it. Possibly one step improvement would be to stop expressing it. That is what happens when you get angry and when you drink water, you control the expression of anger. So also, you know, when feelings of greed or desire or, you know, jealousy there are rising in you, you keep silent, you walk away from that situation. These are all controlling the expression of these negative traits. But Swami, when Swami says fight till the end, what he is referring to is to ensure that these don't arise in the first place. So that requires sadhana, that requires a lot of cleansing that needs to happen. And I also feel, you know, there are triggering factors. There are situations, there are people who trigger these, you know, anger, greed, lust. These are all triggered by situations as well as people. So when we are in the stage of ensuring that it doesn't arise in us, I think we will find that suddenly more of situations and people who actually cause this start coming into our life. And our life gets even more haywire. Like when I've actually decided that I'm going to control my anger, I suddenly start seeing situations and people who make me more angry. It's like when I decide to do meditation, that is when I sit in meditation, I start sweating, I feel a twitch in my ear, I start hearing the dog barking there, the donkey braying here, the power goes off and the fan stops moving and I start feeling hot. All these things happen. And I think that is also with a purpose why Swami is doing that. Because if I truly want to overcome these six, if I want to say that I have controlled my envy, I have controlled my lust, it is not by keeping away from that situation. Total and true control is when you are in the situation and yet those things don't arise in you. And that is why I think this is about fighting till the end. It's not about avoidance. It's not like I was working in such and such a company and such bad things I noticed, so I immediately quit, I joined another company. There it was bad. It's not about running away. It's about standing and fighting till the end. And here I think we should emphasize on the fact that when we say fight till the end, it need not necessarily mean the end of that negative thing. You know, when I'm standing up for something wrong that's happening in my company, for example, in my office or in my organization, and I say that, no, Swami has said fight till the end, so this is wrong, I'm going to fight till the end. It would be wrong on my part to assume that the end means that this situation will get proper and it will become fine. The end actually is ensuring that I don't get sucked into Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya. That is the end. So it might so happen that that situation continues and in the worldly sense I have lost out. But it is about this inner struggle. It is an inner struggle. That's why whenever Swami speaks about fight till the end, Swami always speaks about the Arshad Vargas. It's not about you transforming your organization or changing the place you work or changing your school or changing your family. Nothing. It's about changing oneself, transforming oneself. In the whole fight, the external fight can be anything, but the actual fight is about me overcoming these six, and that is where our focus should always be.
You know, like you have in these many of these fantasy movies, they would have these evil forces coming and attacking, and they will always have this cutoff point by which all these evil forces will vanish. In the first rays of the rising sun and everybody will vanish. It's pretty much like that, because one of the elders once they were talking to me, he said, you know, what is the third F Swami speaks about? He says, fight till the end. It is not fight for the end, which means the end will come when it has to come. You know, that is in Swami's hand. But your duty is to keep fighting till that end comes. And if you look at it, it's like that. You're just fending off all of these things. And many times when Swami speaks about it, you'd say that, see, you're in the world. You're working in the world. You're using the mind. So all of these feelings will come. So your duty is only, like Tyagaraja said, be a guard who just keeps fending off all of these things. There will come a point when all of it will suddenly stop. It's not necessarily that because you've been fighting, it has stopped. Maybe it is because of that. But your duty is, as long as you're there, you stop. And even in that, in a very typical worldly setup, as long as your duty is there to stand and fight, you stand and fight. Tomorrow the duty might change. It's not necessary that you become a failure, but you have fought till the end. That is what matters, and I think that is what counts to Swami, for Swami too.
I think that's why Shirdi Baba always would use the word saburi alongside Shraddha. Faith, yes, faith is necessary, but you also need saburi. You need perseverance. You need to persevere in this. And that's why I think, you know, when we go back to the four F's and the five D's, the D's of determination and discipline are represented by the third F, which is fight till the end. So follow the master is represented by duty and devotion. Face the devil by discrimination. And fight till the end with determination and discipline. It is here that discipline becomes so important in our life, because on the face of it, discipline looks like a regimen which is either self-inflicted or inflicted upon us by others, and we don't like it. And we always, you know, quote Swami saying, Swami said, don't do it by force, you should do it from the source. But we realize that in order to persevere, in order to be consistent in our fight against these, discipline is so very important. And so determination and discipline, these are the D's that come along with the third F, which is fight till the end. Which means that whenever we face trials, tribulations or difficulties in our life, we have to keep going on. Like you said, keep fighting till the end. The end can be your end or the end of the war, either way. And that is what Swami would tell as a beautiful Telugu poem in many of his discourses, where Swami would say that a true devotee is he who has such determination that what he is determined about, either he achieves it or he collapses from the effort of trying to achieve it. There is no other compromise. There is no thing that fight for some time and then say, okay, man, I have tried my best, now let me leave it. No. It's about going on fighting. Either what you're fighting for materializes or you collapse from the effort. That is the quality of a true devotee, Swami would say. And I think it's in this context of fight till the end only that we realize the importance of all the struggles, trials and tribulations in our life. So much so that Swami would give the example of Mother Kunti, who, in spite of going through all the different hardships in her life, tells Krishna, when Krishna asks her, what is the boon that you want, Mother Kunti? Mother Kunti says, Krishna, give me the boon of more and more troubles in my life. And everybody is surprised. Why is she asking this? She tells Krishna, when I'm happy, I don't think of you. But when I'm in trouble, I always think of you. I want to spend my life always thinking of you and therefore fill my life with all troubles. You know, these stories are the ones that give us perspective about what an obstacle is, what a difficulty is. When we look back at our own life also, all those moments of time when we have grown, when we have progressed, it is because of a test that came before that. You know, either literally or figuratively, it is a test which helps us progress to the next grade.
And when you talk about this fight till the end, I mean, it just reminds you of how Swami was when it came to all of us. You know, when we look around the ashram, be it now or even in the past, you would have so many of these very, very elderly devotees serving Swami right till the end. Literally, in the sense, there's no question of retirement in Swami's thinking. I still recall one of the elders coming and asking Swami in the portico whether he can be excused from his duties. You know, he was, I think, 65 or something, and he had some health problems, and he said, Swami, I'm not able to handle it. He was in a very important post. And Swami said, how old are you? He said, Swami, 65 or something, so young and you want to retire. So he said, see me, I'm 75 and I'm still working. I work every day. Right? So from Swami's point of view, it is, work is not meant to achieve something. I think that is a misconception that we have when we are doing work and we are trying to do something. I mean, that is probably the essence of Karma Yoga, which Krishna teaches. Work is to purify the mind. Work is to prepare the mind to receive the ultimate wisdom. So from Swami's point of view, it is always fight till the end. He said, why would you stop and take a break when this is what is meant to give you the ultimate what you're seeking? And that's why it all again comes from follow the master. What is the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is, I mean, what we're going to talk about as finish the game. When that is the thing that your mind is on, everything else will automatically fall in place. So you do not act to achieve anything. You do not, you're not doing your duties to achieve anything, but you're doing it because you know that that is what will fight the enemies. That is what will prepare the mind. And that is what following the master is all about. And that is what is going to lead you to the end of the game.
We come to the finish the game, which is the fourth F. And Swami says, the ultimate goal is moksha. Moksha or realization of the truth that everything around is divine. I mean, you know, that Advaitic state. And that is how, you know, Swami combines the four Fs with dharma, artha, kama and moksha. It is so beautiful. It was so thrilling for us, dear listeners, when we realized that the scriptures prescribe as the purusharthas or the objectives of life, these very four. Dharma, artha, kama and moksha. The beautiful thing that Swami has done is, while the rest of the world possibly looks at these four goals of life in isolation, that we need to have dharma, we need to have artha, which is wealth, we need to have kama, which is desire, which is necessary for a you know, householder's life, and finally moksha is the ultimate goal in life, Swami has so beautifully combined it. Just like Prem had said, pursue artha with dharma. You know, earn all your wealth, artha. As we said earlier, artha stands for wealth, prosperity, relationships, power, influence, all the worldly glories, everything, all combined together is represented by artha. And Swami says, it is not dharma, artha, kama and moksha. It is dharma, artha and kama, moksha. It's almost like the purusharthas are often considered as the four tires, you know, for the car of life to progress. And Swami says, yes, but these tires are not individual. They come in pairs. You have the front tires and the back tires. So one pair is dharma artha, where you follow dharma and earn artha, which is your worldly glory, your worldly influence and power and wealth, everything through dharma. And Swami says, the next is kama moksha. You have desire, but all the desires are modulated and modified with the ultimate desire, which is kama moksha, which is desire for moksha or liberation. And that is how one must lead one's life, Swami says. And that is the beautiful kind of connect Swami makes with the four Fs and the four purusharthas, the ultimate goal of human life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this grouping which Swami would often say, you know, dharma, artha. Dharma should always be attached to artha and kama should be always pointed towards moksha. You can see that even in this, you know, fight till the end and finish the game go together in that sense. Hmm. When you know that the end or what the end of the game is the ultimate. It is not about, you know, setting right the world. At the end of it, end of the day, Swami would say that everything that you see here is only an illusion. It is, you might be thinking that you're achieving something great or, you know, you're bringing order in society. Everything else is a part of a dream, which when you wake up will be gone in one day. So fighting till the end with constantly remembering the end is only that. The end is not me setting right something going astray in my company. The end is not bringing glory to the Sai organization. The end is not me achieving my ambitions in life. The end is only that. And that is why this fight till the end and finish the game is so beautifully connected even in that sense.
I am actually once again tempted to bring up one of my most favorite analogies of life, mm-hmm. which is that life is a drama. Life is a drama. We are all actors. So when we forget that we are actors and when we confuse ourselves for the role, that is when we possibly think of our life's goal as the goal of the role that I'm playing. If I'm playing the role of a hero, I think my life's goal is to destroy the villain, and with that, that is the end. I think that is what is meant by fight till the end, finish the game. If I'm playing the role of a villain in the movie or drama, I think about destroying the hero. Hero villain is again based on our perspective. But from a villain's perspective, if you look, the hero is the villain and he has to destroy the hero. And he feels that my ultimate goal is fight till the end to finish that guy off. But I think in all this, the actual game that we are playing and the fight that we are fighting is to realize that we are not the role. We are actually actors playing the role. That the person ahead of me is not someone whom I hate or someone whom I'm attached to. We are all actors. We are the self same Atma that is playing different roles. We are all actors playing different roles. I think once we realize that, then the game is finished. It doesn't mean that I stop acting in the dramas. Yeah, I continue to act in the dramas, but now I'm not affected by the pleasures or the pains that come with the script of the drama. Because I am part of the drama, but I know that I'm beyond the drama. I'm just an actor playing that role. So I think when we say about following the master, facing the devil, fighting till the end and finishing the game that we have to finish is this wrong idea, wrong identification that I have. I identify myself with the role in the drama, and therefore all the pains and pleasures of life I go through. The moment I identify myself with my true self, which is the Atma, then there is no pain, there is no pleasure, there is no up, there is no down, and it doesn't matter how the drama heads, it doesn't matter who wins in the drama, who loses in the drama, because we know after all it is a drama. So I think that is what it is when we say, when you said that finish the game doesn't mean that I transform the organization or I bring a change in society. It's not about all of that. It's about bringing a change in oneself. Whole of spirituality is a very, very personal journey, and therefore the 4Fs too is about this personal journey.
And when Swami says this, finish the game, I think it is also about that urgency of doing it now. You know, Swami would often say that you never know next birth where you'll be born, whether you'll be born in a family of faith, whether you will have knowledge of all that you have, you know, the advantage of being able to access now in the form of what Swami has said and what of all of these spiritual words. Swami would say that now is the moment. If you do not strive for it now, when will you do it? So in that finish the game, I think it's that urgency, as Swami would say, when Swami spoke about the Bhajagovindam. Mm-hmm. Swami speaks about that first verse of Shankara's Bhajagovindam. First, I think second paragraph where he says, Punarapi Jananam, Punarapi Maranam, Punarapi Janani Jatare Shayanam. And Swami says in that discourse, why is Shankara referring to that phase when you are in the womb of a mother? Because Swami says that is one of the most tough phase for the soul, apparently. That this expansive soul, with the knowledge of its expansiveness, is trapped in this small space. And that is one thing, that feeling of, you know, I don't have the freedom. And the other thing is, that is the moment when the soul is so much indebted to the person who is giving that care at that moment. Mm. And the soul says that, oh God, I'm getting attached again. You know, I'm again getting indebted to this person. So Swami says that feeling of, I want to be free right now, I want to do it now, should always be there. That finish the game is, let's do it now, because otherwise we always, because of the Sanatan Dharma idea that you keep coming again and again, okay, if not now, we'll do it some other time. Some would say that should not be the attitude. It should be that now I know that this is the goal that I have to finish, or this is the goal I have to attain. That urgency should be there to finish the game right now.
In fact, Swami, during a discourse, said that Matru Devo Bhava, mother is your first God. So you must offer gratitude to the mother. And then Swami said, what is the best gratitude you can offer to your mother? Swami said, you have occupied the womb, her womb once. Make a promise that never again you'll occupy a womb and make a mother go through what she went through.
Right.
That is the greatest gratitude. And I think that is also what is meant by finishing the game. So, dear listeners, with that we come to the close of our brief discussion on the 4Fs. Starting from the beautiful way it emerged with Swami in the heart. You know, it is so meaningful because Swami says, follow the masters about following your own conscience. And Swami rubbed it against the heart of a student and said, this is the message of Swami from your heart. The way this quote has emerged and the way it finds grand culmination syncing perfectly with the four objectives of human life as per the great Sanatana Dharma, which is Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. For us personally, dear listeners, it has been a beautiful revelation. It has been a lovely journey, hopefully spiritually as well, but definitely intellectually and emotionally. It has been wonderful to go through the four Fs. We hope you have also benefited. We welcome your feedback. You can, as always, write to us at listener@radiosai.org. And on that note, we offer this at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan and end with a bhajan, on the other side of which, as always, you will be greeted by Brother Chandu in his segment, Love to Love.
Thursday Live. Stay tuned.